الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. والصلاة والسلام على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. صلوات وأما بعد، فقد قال الله سبحانه وتعالى في الكتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، قل لا أسألكم عليه أجرا إلا المودة في القربى. صدق الله العلي العظيم. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Once again, I express my condolences to the Imam of our age, to each and every one of you, and to mu'mineen and mu'minat worldwide, as we continue in our commemoration of the sacrifices of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. His companions and his family members. We often say that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the savior of Islam. And what we've been trying to show throughout our discussion thus far is not just that this movement is a product of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his imamat and his leadership, but also his family. And his family played a very large role, central role, not just in the preparing of this movement, but in the delivering of the message of this movement. And we wanted to begin these series of discussions by reminding ourselves of the position of women in Islam and in the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. And especially for the benefit of the youth, because, you know, those of us who are older, most of our friends are Muslim. Nobody really hangs out with us. We're not cool anymore. Sometimes the older we get, the more agitated, easily angered we are. So one reason I like to work with machines, because they don't talk back. You don't have any problems with them. But young people especially, they have friends in school or in the neighborhood that are going to ask questions. And they have to be outfitted with the tools to be able to answer those questions. And so we spent a little time, night before last primarily, and last night to a certain extent also, reminding of the position of women in the development of divine religion and divine history and in the development of Islam and in the saving of Islam. So that the ladies on the other side of the parda and these young men, that when they're confronted with these issues, they can say, oh, wait, oh, hold up. We're not the Taliban, okay? We've got examples of strong women in leadership roles throughout our history. So this is important. One thing I like to do when I discuss these issues also, and especially in regards to the commemorations of Imam Hussein's movement, when we discuss the role of women in that movement, is to remind the young people about some of these rights that are mentioned in Risalatul Huquq, the treatise on rights by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salatu wasalam. And the reason is because the imamate of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is the way in which this community is rebuilt. This community, and a lot of times I get a lot of heat, and I know last time I mentioned it here, I got a lot of heat after the speech also. What we fail to realize is that this community, and I don't mean the Orlando HIC community, I mean this community of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. So I'm not singling out anybody, but I'm saying this community, this Ummat Muhammad, this Ummat Zahra, we abandoned our imam at one time. At Karbala, this community abandoned their imam. And we suffered a terrible price for that. And it's because of the sacrifices of this imam and his families that we have this religion. And these gatherings that we have are in a way atonement on behalf of our nation. That when we get together and grieve and remember Imam Hussein and remember and are grateful for his sacrifices, then in some little way we're showing to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we are not Ahlul Kufa. We haven't forgotten our imam, nor would we ever leave our imam. Salawat. This verse that I mentioned to you in the khutbah is from where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala commands Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in Surah Ash-Shu'ara. Allah commands Prophet and says, say to them that I do not ask of you any reward except mawadda, love of my near relatives. And we had explained this before, mawadda is different from hub. To have someone as a mahbub, as a beloved, is different than to show mawadda to someone. Hub is love, like what love, we talk about love. L-O-V-E, love. And it's become very cheap in our society. The word love. We throw it around like it's nothing. But really, if you're going to translate hub, this is love. Mawadda is that deep and affectionate and that caring love, not sexual in any way, but a deeper love. And we're commanded in Quran to give that type of love to Ahlul Bayt. By giving this to this Ahlul Bayt, we should realize what their sacrifices have been. Over the last 2 days, we tried to stress the importance of the ladies. This evening, I want to remind you of the position of the men in this movement. And we'll begin with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein, as the leader of this movement, as the founder of this movement, we see that we can learn something from his leadership of this movement for our own lives. If in the last 2 nights we mentioned the example of the ladies, this evening we want to start mentioning the example of the men. And if in the last 2 nights we were trying to remind ourselves of the position of women in Islam and in our own families, this evening we want to begin reminding our men of their own positions also. In the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we see one thing happen that you could kind of say is the catalyst of this movement. The thing that starts this whole thing seemingly in motion. And that is the news of the death of Muawiyah. That upon hearing the news of the death of Muawiyah and the demand for bay'ah from this mal'oon Yazid, then we see that Imam Hussein alayhi salam begins this movement with a denial of the demand of bay'ah. So the initialization of this movement is a no from Imam Hussein directed at Yazid. But understand that there's a reason why we could say that this is that catalyst. And that is because Imam Hussein alayhi salam was bound by the treaty that was enacted during the imamate of Imam Hassan. If you remember Imam Hassan alayhi salam, he established a treaty between himself and Muawiyah that maintained some level of peace between the followers of Ahlul Bayt and the followers of Banu Umayyah. Imam Hussein was bound by this treaty, and upon the death of Muawiyah, this treaty is now null and void. And so it's not the fact that Yazid is demanding bay'ah. Yazid is a very minor player in this whole scenario. What's a bigger issue for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and this is one of the signs of his leadership of this movement, is that Yazid never comes up. We have one hadith from Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad, narrated at different times during his journey, and maybe one or two others that are unclear as far as Allah, yeah. Brothers, please excuse the interruption, but there's a gold Toyota Camry LE with the tag number NB062111. The lights are on. So please see about your gold-colored Toyota Camry LE, that the lights may be on. If they're not those automatic lights that turn off, you might want to look into that. You may have a tough time getting home. Salawat. So one of the things that we see in the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the leadership of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is that right away he identifies through his perception and through his view what the real danger is. He says, what a calamity it would be. What a calamity would befall Islam if ever we should be afflicted with an affliction like Yazid. In this case, we might think that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is speaking about the person of Yazid. But please note, he says, if we were to be afflicted with an affliction like a Yazid. Again, he's deflecting. He's not saying directly, and he never speaks directly about Yazid. Even in this letter that he leaves with his brother, Muhammad ibn Hanafiya, when he leaves Medina, which by most of the scholars is looked at as the manifesto of Karbala, where Imam Hussein alayhi salam lays out his aims and goals and means of attaining them, he never mentions Yazid. Yazid doesn't come up. What does come up? He says, "Uridu an arida bisirat jaddi wa abi." He says, "I want that I should live my life." Uridu an asira bisirat jaddi wa abi, that I should live my life according to the pattern and lifestyle of my grandfather and my father. The real danger, as Imam Hussein alayhi salam is pointing out in this letter, where he says, "Uridu an amara bil ma'arufi wa anha an al munkar," that I want to enjoin the right and forbid the evil. Imam Hussein is saying, look, the big danger here is the nullification of the sunnah and sirah of the Prophet. This is the real danger. Yazid is just an external symptom. Like if you've got a disease that's eating away at you from the inside, but on the outside it might only show some small symptom. But inside it's a big disease. Yazid is that very insignificant, almost you can overlook it. What was so different between the dhulm that he was going to commit and the dhulm of Muawiyah? La'natullah alayhim. What was the difference? There's no difference in the level of dhulm that they were going to commit. Muawiyah killed an imam. He did it underhandedly. He didn't send an army out to kill him. But how much blood did Muawiyah have on his hands? The danger here is that the sunnah and the seerah is in danger, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam, with his leadership, identifies that. So one of the first things we see and can learn from Imam Hussein alayhi salam is that in that position of leadership, and we're talking about not only as leaders like Imam Hussein alayhi salam, or leaders of a community, but even ourselves, leaders in our own families, which really the men are supposed to be. Any problem that you have in your family is your fault. You can't blame your wife or your children, or it's your fault because you're the imam. It's my fault because I'm the imam. I'm at fault. There's something that I'm doing or not doing that's causing this. Now, sometimes you do run into strange cases where people are just bad and they can't change and they don't want to change, and this is something else. But with an imam, with a leader, he should realize what the real issues are. You remember a few months ago, this Yahoo was going to come and burn some Quran. And everybody was in a big confusion. He's going to burn a Quran. Some brothers wanted to make tazahurat, like to get a group together and go for tazahurat, to go and do some protest there, to protest in front of it. And we were telling them, brothers, don't go. They said, no, it's wajib. We have to go. Quran is going to get burned. This man is doing this thing for publicity. All he wants is to get the biggest crowd there that he can get. Now, if you guys go there in a mixed crowd, Shias and Sunnis, how long is it going to take one idiot? It just takes one idiot to jump up and do something stupid. And then Islam as a whole gets a bad name. Isn't this what happens? One guy jumps up. I remember when they had the demonstration against this embargo in Tampa. These brothers went for tazahurat in a mixed group. And one idiot Palestinian guy comes running from the back of the procession and takes the Israeli flag that one of these opposition protesters are holding and starts to stamp on it and jump on it and step on it. And of course the news cameras are there, and of course the news cameras are going to film it, and of course the media is going to say, what? Look at these Muslims. Can't even have a protest. Can't even have a proper protest. They're going to go and do something stupid. We have to realize what the real issues are. And sometimes we want to go in these issues and involve ourselves in these issues, not understanding what the real danger is. Around this same time, one other guy announced his marja'iyat in Shahr Ramadan. And this is clearly the bigger danger, that someone would come in, do something like this in Shahr Ramadan, in this part of the world, the Wild West, when there's no laws and regulations, there's no sheriff, there's no marshal, it's open ground out here. There's a difference between seeing just little details and big issues. And Imam Hussein, alayhi salatu wasalam, in leading this movement of his, clearly shows that he has that perspective. And is trying to show us also to differentiate between big issues and little issues. Salawat. Now last night we mentioned the issue of choice. And we were discussing that issue of freedom of choice, and that freedom of choice is based on knowledge, and how Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in attracting followers to himself, always gave those followers a free choice. They were free to join his movement or free to leave his movement, but never were they under any force. Never were they under any compulsion to join with him. This is as far as his supporters are concerned. Now, one thing we've never realized about this movement is the place in which it takes place, the climax of the movement of Imam Hussein at Karbala. This movement happens at Karbala, and if you know your history from the beginning, supporters of Imam Hussein alayhi salam were giving him a number of options. Some were telling him, flee to the hills. You can hide out in the countryside, in the hills, until the situation cools down and we'll better know what to do. Other supporters said, look, you can get away to Yemen. Because you see, the Shias and the followers of Ahlul Bayt, even at this time, had a very hardcore group of followers in Yemen. These Houthis that you hear about in the news today, they are basically the descendants of those Shias that we read about that fell into love with Imam Ali alayhi salam during the time of Rasulullah, when Imam Ali alayhi salam was sent to Yemen to right the wrongs of some of these generals that had overstepped their bounds. And a strong relationship was established between Imam Ali and Ahlul Bayt and these Shias of Yemen. And people were advising Imam Hussein during the beginning of his movement, flee to Yemen. You've got supporters there, you can hide out there. You know, once you get away to Yemen, no one can get you, was what people was telling him. You're free. Others were saying, go to Kufa. And we see that in each of these cases, Imam Hussein alayhi salam brushes them off. I mean, from the beginning of the movement, his own brother Muhammad ibn Hanafiya says, don't go to Kufa. Don't go anywhere else. If you're going to go anywhere, go to Makkah, but otherwise escape to the countryside. Imam Hussein says, I thank you for your advice. I know that your advice comes from the heart, but I can't do as you ask me to. Other people would say, okay, if you're going, where are you going? And he would make it clear to them that he was going towards that place that Allah had ordained for him. Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam was never saying that I'm going to Kufa. His destination, his place where he was planning to arrive at was always Karbala. You remember when he comes into contact with Khurd ibn Ziyad and he's led off the path to Kufa into this area of Karbala. When he arrives there, he announces to the caravan, stop. By Allah, this is the place that was promised to me. This is that land of Karbala. And he sends around and he asks the name of this. And the tribesmen from this area report back to him. This is the place that he was going. The reason he chose Karbala is because it should happen, this revolution should happen, near the Shia centers. By this time, Kufa, Najaf, Basra, these cities that we know of today in Iraq, were already bustling and well-populated Shia centers. So the intended audience of Imam Hussein's movement were situated in this area. He wants to deliver this message as close to the intended recipients as possible. This is why this movement doesn't happen in Medina or in Mecca. And it's not intended to happen in Kufa. It's intended to happen on that barren, dry plain of Karbala. Because now there's a choice for the Shias. In the same way that Imam Hussein, through his leadership, through his wilayat, made sure that these people who joined with him chose to do so, he made sure that when this movement would take place and this climactic, tragic battle would happen, that it would happen in such a place where we, his ummah, would face a choice also. Do we answer the call of our imam when that call comes? And you see, this is training. This is training for us. We went through the school of Hussein so that when Sahibul Asri wa Zaman, when he comes and calls, Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad, wajjil farajhum. When he comes and calls, our ummah has been here before. And we may have failed that call before. But because of this experience and this tradition of Azadari and this tradition of Majlis al-Husseini, then we won't fail that call again. You realize that with Imam Hussein alayhi salam, no enemy ever raises a sword against an imam again. After Imam Hussein, there is no more open warfare between the enemies of Islam and our imams. After Imam Hussein, the way that they attack this religion is secretly and underhandedly because they can't risk another Karbala. Because now the Shias have learned that lesson. You see, the movement of Al-Mukhtar and the movement of the Tawwabun showed them that. Showed them that the Shias had learned the lesson. We imbibed the lesson that we learned at Karbala. We learned how to answer the imam's call because we were bereft of our imam. So never again would they allow an imam to meet us on the battlefield and raise that call again. And the next time when that call comes, then inshallah, because we've been to the school of Imam Hussein, we should then realize this, we have learned this, and answer the call, inshallah. Salawat. So, this is looking at that wilayat of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in the aspect of his movement. But what about in the aspect of his own family? You know, we see that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he had been training his son, Imam Zainul Abidin, for the assumption of the leadership of this movement and the leadership and the rebuilding of this community. One thing that we see at Karbala is that in this caravan, there are children. Even the wife of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, even the children of Imam Hussein himself, even his grandchildren, Imam Muhammad Baqir, alayhi salam. So this is an extended family traveling in this caravan. And in this caravan, we also see Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his wilayat in the aspect of his family. We see that at one point, if you look at the condition of Imam Hussein, in this camp, he is not only the father of his own children, but he's also the father of those orphans who are with him. Look at the story when Imam Hussein alayhi salam receives the news that Hazrat Muslim ibn Aqil has been martyred. When he finds out that Hazrat Muslim has been martyred and now he has this burden with him that his cousin has been martyred. And he's thinking of these two boys that are stuck there in Kufa. How will they escape? Looking at his own children, he calls his own daughter, Sakina. You see, these children of Imam Hussein's family, they were all very close. And he finds solace in that moment by rubbing his hand on the head of Sakina. And Sakina, she realizes this, that this is something strange. Why is my father doing this with me? Why is my father holding me and caressing me in this way? And she asks, Father, is there something wrong? We see Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Now in this situation, he has to confront his own situation as this girl's father and the uncle of those boys. And in this instance, we see that he refrains from informing her at this point. He puts that off. Because you see, Hazrat Sakina at Karbala, she was like the leader of these children in that caravan. She was the one who was leading those children. And in these children, amongst these children, there were older children and the younger children. Hazrat Sakina amongst these children was those leader of those younger children. Of course, this group of children had other leaders as well. We see the children of Hazrat Zainab alayhi salam, Hazrat Aun and Hazrat Muhammad. These two young boys, they acted as bodyguards in many respects for those combatants who would go forward. You see, the Arabs had a tradition. They would fight in one-to-one combat. But sometimes these enemies, they would try to attack from the sides or from the back. So the job of Aun and Muhammad on the day of Ashura, before entering one-on-one combat on their own, was to actually keep those people who would sneak around off of the enemies, off of the combatants. So we see that amongst these children now, Imam Hussein alayhi salam has this position of not only father of his own children, but father also of those children who are in the camp that are not his own. And we see that many of the choices he makes, he puts his own children first in the line of danger. Before he freely gives chance to those orphans in his camp to go forward, he gives readily to his own children. This is leadership, that this leader puts himself in danger and his own in danger before his own followers. That Imam Hussein is not one of those leaders who's sending off others' children to fight while keeping back his own. He leads through example. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, at the very end of this now, when there's no one left but just Imam Hussein and his family members, all of his companions have been killed, Imam Hussein still has one son left. This one son who will do more to spread the message of Imam Hussein's movement on the day of Karbala than almost all of those other combatants on that day. You see, because the reason Imam Hussein was at Karbala as a father, as an imam, as a leader of a community, was to affect the hearts of this community. He wasn't there to fight and to kill and to defend. His message was a message intended for the hearts of this community. How would he penetrate this message into their hearts? And especially amongst the din and the clamor of this war. At one point, his baby son, Ali Asghar, is very thirsty. His tongue is swollen from thirst. Because, you know, if you deprive a woman of water, of fluid, for some time, or put her body under stress for some time, naturally what her body will do is decrease the amount of milk produced. So in the situation at Karbala, Hazrat Ali Asghar's mother, her milk has been reduced to nothing. So that now he can get no drink. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is asked by his wife, take this son of yours and see that perhaps they will give him some water to drink. That maybe you take him there. These enemies, their problem is with us, the adults. Surely they don't have any problem with a six-month-old baby. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he accepts this amanat. And fathers, they should know this. When mommy turns over the baby to you, really, she's not giving you the baby like it's yours, you know. When mommy gives you that baby is hers that she is letting you hold. She's entrusting you with her baby. Even if you're the father, when she turns over this baby to you, she is giving you her baby. In her mind, this is hers. This belongs to her. And she is taking a big risk to trust you with it. You ever see those mothers when they first come home from the hospital? Fathers are sometimes scared to hold the baby. And when mother turns over that baby to that father, you can see the apprehension on her face. She's watching closely. This is her baby. Imam Hussein's wife turns over Ali Asghar. A lot of times we hear this story and we don't understand really what's being said in the story. We live in a modern age and we don't understand a lot of these implements that were used. When you hunt and when you practice and when you go to war, it's three different types of ammunition. Today, we only have bullets. Bullets are bullets. Arrows are different. Arrows, you see, when you go and you do target practice, or in the old days, when you were forbidden from hunting on the king's land, you would use a type of an arrow that they would call a blunt. It's an arrow with a blunt tip with a very short spine on the front of it. It's perfect for target practice. It's perfect for little animals like rabbits or birds. But for big game, it can't do anything against them. Or humans, it can't hurt humans. It's a blunt. Another type of arrow is that type of arrow that you might use when you're fighting human beings. This is a type of arrow that's deliberately made to puncture armor or thick bedding. And one of the aspects of this is that when you fire with this type of arrow that you're using for human beings, for warfare, it's usually a lighter arrow, smaller arrow, so that you can carry more of them. Because the object of an archer in war is to fire many arrows. These two types of arrows are different from the type of arrow that you use to hunt with. The arrow that you use to hunt with, it's a very heavy arrow. Many times it has three barbs on it, like this. And these points are made so that they create the maximum amount of damage when they're shot at an animal that is a game animal, like a deer. One thing we don't realize about the desert is that the desert has quite a bit of live animals and deers and these different types of antelopes that you can hunt in the desert. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam took his son Ali Asghar out, and he addresses this crowd, You called me here. You invited me here. You cut me off from water. Now my family is thirsty. This little baby, he's done nothing to you. This little baby, he's thirsty. If you think that I'm asking for water for him so that I can drink it, then look, I lay him down here. One of you come and give him water, and I'll go back. And you just take care of this baby for me. No one stepped forward. Orders were given in the camp. No one go to help. Imam Hussein picks up his son, and as he picks up his son, Ali Asghar looks towards that crowd. He's not old enough to talk yet, and he doesn't have the strength to cry. So all he does is he sticks out his tongue. It's as if Ali Asghar is addressing the crowd. And this tactic works so well that in the army of this mal'oon, dog of Banu Umayyah, the troops begin to cry. And the troops begin to lament, why wayla? The troops themselves now are on the verge of switching sides. Imam Hussein, from that position of leadership, as a father, may have known, may not have known, that his son would have had such an effect on his enemy. But the fact remains that this enemy, the effect was so total that the general now begins to fear. He says, silence the child. Ali Asghar hasn't said anything. Silence him for what? Because the message that Ali Asghar is sending to those troops in that camp is the message of, is this the muwadda you show to Ali Muhammad? Is that deep and affectionate love that you repay Prophet Muhammad with? And the order is given to Khurmallah. Silence Ali Asghar. Silence the son of Hussein. And he pulls one of these arrows that's used for hunting game. That arrow that you might use when you hunt deer or antelope or other large game. It's designed to crush the bones of animals of prey. It's designed to take the life of huge four-legged beasts. It's not designed to be fired at the neck of a six-month-old baby. This blow pins the body of Ali Asghar to the body of Imam Hussein. That these two now are joined together, not just by ties of relationship, not just by ties of relationship to Prophet, but now they're joined together by the arrow of Hurmullah. That when Imam Hussein removes that arrow, his blood and the blood of Ali Asghar, they mix together. When Imam Hussein goes to throw this blood onto the ground, creation rejects the blood. The creation of Allah says, you cannot stain me with the blood of Ali Asghar. Imam Hussein now has to return this amanat. His wife had given him this baby saying, get some water for this baby to drink. My child is dying. You are the leader of this family. You are the provider of this family. You are the father of this child. You're responsible for our welfare, even in this barren landscape. Get some water for my child to drink. Can you see Imam Hussein with the body of his son? And now he has to go back to that tent. He takes a few steps forward, but he can't imagine giving this news to his wife. This precious infant that you gave me, that you made a trust to me, and I saw that look in your eye, wondering how I would bring back this child to you. Now Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he turns around. He comes back from the tent. Seven times He steps forward to the tent. Seven times he turns back. He can't find it within himself to face the mother of Ali Asghar. As a father, as a husband, it's so difficult for him. وَلَا حَوْلَ وَلَا قُوَّةَ إِلَّا بِاللَّهِ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمِ.